You're listening to The Naked Scientists, and so far we've heard about some of the highlights from Science Saturday, but the festival has actually been running all week, and earlier this week Mira met up with Duncan Law Green and Will Whitehorn to discuss the future of the tourism industry.
The mission? My summer holiday. Destination? Outer space. Think I'm joking? The way commercial space travel is developing, this could soon be a reality. As part of the Cambridge Science Festival, two scientists working in this field came to town to tell us about the possibility that by 2010, regular members of the public, well, members of the public with $200,000 to spare, could be spending their annual leave in space. I went along to the event, and the first speaker was Duncan Law Green from the University of Leicester. I spoke to him afterwards, and he told me more about the concept of space tourism.
Space tourism is developing new and cheaper ways of getting into space that reach the point where a large fraction of the population can actually afford to travel into space.
How many people have done this as tourists to date?
To date, five have paid in the region of $20 to $30 million each for Soyuz trips to the International Space Station.
What projects are in development at the moment to make this more common and, you know, more frequent for people?
We can break them into two groups, suborbital and orbital. Suborbital is where the spacecraft travels sufficiently high to reach the edge of space, 100 kilometres above the surface of the Earth, but it isn't going sufficiently fast to reach orbit, so it's going less than about 17,000 miles an hour. The major projects for suborbital are Virgin Galactic, Blue Origin. There's a project by EADS Astrium, and there's a small-scale project by Armadillo Aerospace, which is owned by John Carmack, who developed the Doom and Quake video games.
What challenges are the designers of these projects facing?
Well, the major issue is safety. Current manned orbital spacecraft have a risk of fatal accident of around 1 in 70, so they want to make it at least 100 times safer than that, which gets you around the level of safety of the first generation of commercial airliners in the 1930s. And the challenges there are to have a robust airframe, really safe propulsion systems, make sure that the rocket engine starts when it should, each time, every time. It doesn't detonate in any way, it doesn't fail in any way, so that's the real challenge.
There must be environmental impacts of these developments.
There's a number of possible environmental impacts. You have to consider the carbon dioxide emissions, the carbon footprint, possibility for toxic chemical release, because a lot of these rocket systems may use dangerous chemicals, you need to handle them, disturbance to nearby wildlife, sonic booms and their effects on the locality, the risk of dropping debris on nearby population. The US Environmental Protection Agency is very careful about that and makes all the spaceport developers go through a very long process that they have to justify all this. They have to account for all the possible risks and make sure that the spaceport will be safe and have a minimal environmental impact.
What's the future of this, and what further developments will there be?
The next step after Spaceship Two is probably a long-distance, point-to-point suborbital vehicle that would take you, say, from London to Sydney in an hour. So you'd be flying several thousand miles an hour up above the atmosphere and curve up in an arc and then come back down at Sydney.
The ability to view our beautiful Earth from high above and see kangaroos, all within an hour. Who could want more? Well, one person that thinks we're capable of even more is Will Whitehorn, president of Virgin Galactic. He also spoke at the event and told me more about the aims of his company.
Essentially, Virgin Galactic is going to be an operator of a space launch system. Our first operation is going to be taking people into space who've paid up to $200,000 to go. But we have a longer-term industrial application that we want to use the space launch system for. So we want to be an operator who also carries cargo into space in the future, science experiments into space. And we want the ability to use this system with its very low environmental impact and very low cost to launch low Earth orbit satellites as well.
How do your designs and the materials you use, how are they better than what's already used, and how are they better for the environment?
For a start, they're not metal, so they're very, very light. Carbon composite is a very light material, so you use very little energy to get it up into the atmosphere. The aircraft that we're developing, for example, is the world's first really true all-carbon composite plane, and it burns hardly any fuel. And it can get the spaceship well above the atmosphere, to the top of above the tropopause, up to about 50,000 feet before it even fires a rocket. It then needs to be a much smaller rocket than it would need from the ground. The rocket itself has benign materials in it, rubber and nitrous oxide. so it causes very little environmental impact. As a result of that, it's also low cost. You can pretty much say that anything that costs a lot of money in transportation is using more energy and having a bigger environmental impact. So every time the shuttle takes off, for example, each shuttle launch costs about $750 million and has the same impact and output as nearly the whole population of New York for a week. Whereas this system is going to have about the same environmental impact as a business class ticket from London to New York on a normal aeroplane. So it really is revolutionary in terms of the energy it uses in getting to space.
And how does it actually work? So how does it fly differently?
One of the things this does in space is instead of trying to re-enter the atmosphere like the shuttle does and fly a flight profile and land on the atmosphere in effect, it changes shape in space into a shuttlecock and drops into the atmosphere and then at 50,000 feet changes into a glider and without using any energy at all, simply glides back down to the airport. So it's a very simple system, but it's a very unique technology because nobody had ever thought of changing the shape in space of the vehicle to allow it to get into the atmosphere more easily.
And how far into space are you going to take people? So what will the actual experience involve?
The experience in total for people will be about 2.5 hours. They'll fly up to 50,000 feet, they'll be launched in the rocket, they'll go into space, they'll see the beauty of the planet, they'll experience weightlessness and be able to move around in the cabin. They'll be able to then come back into the Earth's atmosphere. So they will get a pretty comprehensive experience with about 3 days' training for it before they fly.
I have to admit, I thought the experience might last a bit longer than 2.5 hours. But either way, the notion that we could all one day experience what the astronauts do is truly out of this world.
That was Will Whitehorn, president of Virgin Galactic, and before him Duncan Law Green from Leicester University, talking to Mira about the future of space tourism.
Wow, I want to do it. I want to go up to space. I'll probably get travel sick, though.